KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
And once again, Glenn Lutyens is generous to spend some time with us talking about another topic that is so vital to families and marriages. Glenn, thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome, Steve. Great to be with you.
Listen, Glenn is a licensed marriage and family therapist. He's been on the Focus on the Family counseling team for decades. And even before that, spent time in church counseling and pastoral ministry. Again, Glenn, we so much appreciate this insight today, looking at financial problems that, you know, all of us who've been married any length of time, or even before marriage, we may find, hopefully before marriage, we run into this, but the financial problems that they contribute, not even a problem, financial conversations and problems contribute to stress and arguments, or debates in most marriages. And, you know, I assume we'll probably cover much of this, including overspending or failure to track expenditures and bills, a lack of planning, different financial goals, and not only that, but different financial roles. We'll talk about the saving nerd and the spender, a great opportunity to walk through this issue that does cause friction. Glenn, I'm sure in the midst of it too, we can talk about, and I'm sure you've seen it in counseling over the decades, when communication is happening, both parties find relief in this and satisfaction, I'm sure. But where would you like to start?
Well, I think you had kind of mentioned something that I think is wise to say, because we may have some people listening today who are individuals who are not married. And I would say that's really the starting point, is to be able to have some conversations, observation as well. I mean, if you're dating someone, I mean, if it's a guy who's spending every dollar he has and he doesn't have enough money for his car insurance, you know, that's kind of a red flag. How do they approach finances? Do they approach it as finances are a gift from God that are to be stewarded in a wise way? Or is it just kind of, you know, they're squalling away every cent they have? I sometimes think back to when I was a single adult and I had a ledger. And I mean, if I bought a candy bar, it was written down. So, you know, 35 cents or whatever it was at the time, it would get written down. I'm not sure. I'm glad my wife didn't see that until we were after into our relationship. But really just getting an idea of, okay, how do you view it? Is there a biblical view of all my finances are something that are God's? And together, when you have two different individuals who have two different experiences, I'm not saying you have to have exactly the same financial family backgrounds in order to make a marriage work, but I think there has to be a flexibility that we're going to find something that we both are comfortable with. It's not just going to be a win for me. It's not just going to be a win for you. It's not just going to be a his and hers, but we're going to find something that we can both feel good about as we steward the enjoyment of what God has given, as well as using it in a God-honoring way.
All right, you touched on a couple of things there, Glenn, that actually had come to mind prior to you saying it, and that is, you know, getting to a place that you can both, you know, essentially live with and compromise, hesitate to use that word, but flexibility, right. I think, was a good one. How careful do we need to be in that area? And I'm not saying we shouldn't at all. Boy, that's a tricky line to walk.
Right. Right. Well, and I think even prior to marriage, let's say if there's a pastor or a counselor who's listening, I don't think it's inappropriate to say, what I'd like you to do is bring in your credit reports next time we meet. It's harder to do that to say, you know, to a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you know, I'd like to see your credit report. You know, it kind of creates that level of distrust. But if it's somebody who is really wanting to make sure that there's not an individual who has this, you know, boatload of debt, that we can be on the same page. And if there is some debt, you know, what are the plans to work at it? Is a person seeing that, okay, I'm chipping away at it. I may be going without some things that I would rather like now in order for that to happen. But the ability to communicate together about, you know, what did you see? You know, what, how did your parents deal with finances? What did you learn from that? You know, I think can be valuable prior to marriage and then in the course of marriage, just to be able to talk about it and to let each other know, I don't want this to be a source of tension and conflict for us. You know, and as a counselor, I can say very confidently, you know, I know how money can create problems, and money is not really the problem, but the people with the money, how they deal with it, that creates the problems, but that the topic of money can be so difficult. I want this to be something that we both feel good about. Even just voicing that can really lower the level of tension. It can lower the level of defensiveness for each person. And I would say one really important aspect of that is maybe changing a little bit of our terminology. It's very easy, and counselors are very prone to talk about, you know, making sure that you have a budget, that you stick to a budget. I would be more inclined to call it a spending plan. People are more inclined to enjoy spending. And so what the spending plan does is it kind of conveys, okay, what do we have for what are the areas, so that at the end of the month, when maybe there's less money in the bank, there's not going to be the level of anxiety or panic. And it may be that one person is more inclined to feel that anxiousness. I think biochemically, some of us are more prone to that than others. I'd say I'm more prone to feel, you know, anxious if there's maybe a debt that would need to be paid. And if we don't have the money for it, I'm going to be the one who's probably a little bit more anxious. My wife is, and I'm not saying that that's a detriment to her at all. I think the kind of the way I approach it is probably more problematic. But, you know, it's just going to create a greater level of calm if there's a plan that we have, that we're working together. There's a sense of teamwork. And that actually engenders a lot of positive emotion towards, yeah, we were able to do this, we set out to do this, and it's not an approach that really favors one way or the other. Because I do think you find a lot of the, just that old phrase, opposites attract. And often you'll find one person who's, you know, the spendthrift, and the other one who, you know, wants to save every dime in case this happens or that happens. Again, that's probably more inclined with the anxiety piece.
Well, you know, I might have, I hope this is a good illustration when you say opposites attract. And I don't know why this came to mind, but I'm a music lover. Mm. And you know, most of us that are at our age, Glenn, remember a band called the Beatles. Right. And you know, Paul McCartney has always been my favorite Beatle. And I think because he generally gives off a joy, smile, easygoing vibe. And John Lennon was my least favorite. Mm. And I think because he was kind of a, you know, there was a darkness about, you know, I don't know, brooding. And actually only recently came to realize that the combination of those two together made beautiful music. And I think that some of what you're talking about when you say opposites attract and there's, you know, and creates a balance as we head into marriage. The other thing I wanted to touch on, the counselor that would ask for the credit report, I kind of like that idea, and any hesitation would be like, well, listen, you're about to be headed into marriage. Right. You will bear yourselves to one another, both, you know, literally and, you know, in this way with maybe the credit reports. But and actually, if someone has an objection there, well, that's, you know, that's you don't need to see it anymore.
Right.
But some great insight. Now, the friction, I don't know if we actually touched on this as much as you would have liked. There's going to be friction because people, you know, like you said, oh, so often, the bride and groom or spouses are so different. And as they come together and try to figure this out, you know, what are some of the ways to alleviate that financial friction in addition to what you might have already shared?
Yeah. Well, I think writing down what are your wants? And not every want in our life is evil. Not every want in our life is godly. But sometimes just being able to put it on paper can be helpful. Let's say one person, you know, they grew up in a family. Every summer they went to the lake. It was next to heaven. It was just a wonderful experience for them. And so when they think about our spending, the idea of not having a vacation or not having a fairly extended time of vacation is almost really just an emotional shutdown for them. So they may put down, okay, you know, vacation, and to be able to talk about what are the emotions that engendered. I mean, when you guys were able to get together, what was that like? Well, it may be, it could have been that they went to a Bible camp together, and so there's a spiritual just delight that they had. Maybe it was that connection, that bonding, just the smell of a campfire that brought a certain emotion. So instead of it just being, okay, what do you want to spend the money on? What did that money feel like as far as when you spent that? What did it engender for you? A spouse might say, you know, vacation, we never had time for vacation, but maybe there was something different that money was spent on. And so, you know, maybe for one couple, it's more, or one spouse, it's maybe more of the name brand clothing or the name brand food items in the refrigerator, you know, Hellman's, as opposed to, you know, the value budget mayonnaise that the other spouse feels is wonderful and fine. So, yeah. You know, but if you can talk about some of those things and really understand each other's hearts, I think there's going to be less heel digging into, well, it's got to be my way. Because now what we've done is we've opened up our heart, and we've opened up our heart to our spouse's heart. So if he or she shares that something was really meaningful, generally speaking, unless there's some other issues that really need to be addressed, I'm going to be interested in that. I'm going to want them to experience some satisfaction. So I'm going to make whatever steps I can to try to accommodate that. If I'm only talking about what we think money should be spent on, but not the emotional piece to it, I think it loses some of that flavor.
Yeah. Glenn, as I listened to where you went, here's something that came to mind. Should we do our best to, as often as we can, find a way to say yes to those wants that were listed by the spouse? And here's kind of what I'm thinking. You know, the spouse talks about the going to the lake or whatever, mm-hmm. whatever vacations might have been. But, you know, and this is maybe extreme, but to say, yes, I agree. I think the regular vacations are something that we need to plan on because of these benefits that you listed. May I make a suggestion that because of the income that we're at now, instead of planning for the Viking River cruise, that mm-hmm. we plan on a staycation near the Riverwalk or something
mm-hmm. right.
that's more affordable with the amount of money that we have available, so we can grow together and get to a place where we can comfortably afford the Viking trip. And that, I think that speaks to some of the flexibility, that we mentioned before, but, back to Glenn, ways to find, you know, finding ways to say yes.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, now sometimes if a spouse is they grew up, they got whatever they wanted, and that's the attitude they have. When it comes to how are we going to pay for that? Well, that's not their concern at all. They just, this is the way it was. This is what we need to do. You know, that creates, I think, a little bit more serious of a problem, because at that point, it's one person just being about themselves. They probably have a very difficult time empathizing with how the other spouse is experiencing it. But even if it's a scenario where, you know, a person can hear the emotional delight, how can we do that in a way that, as you mentioned, is not the Viking River cruise? You know, so we can experience the same delight, but maybe not with the same financial output. And so we're maximizing that, but we're also trying to live within the framework of what we have. We're not going outside of our spending plan that's going to be detrimental. Because there are many times, and this is, I think, unfortunate, where a person does want to please their spouse, and their spouse has that kind of demand or gimme perspective towards finances. And, you know, so they'll say yes because they just have a hard time being assertive and saying, you know, that really doesn't fit within what we have financially. And you know, that's going to create problems. But if we can look for what are those things that are going to create some of the same emotions, but without the same financial outlay, that's going to be helpful.
All right. Well, hey, we're up against a break, Glenn. Can you stay with us?
Sure, I can.
Okay, I'm going to tease a little bit though, because you don't want to go away. Some of the things I'd like to cover when we come back, and some may be already asking it to the radio speaker wherever they are, is separate accounts, and that there's a bunch of little people watching what you're doing. We're gonna come back. Can we cover some of that when we get back, Glenn?
Sure.
All right. We'll come back with more right after this on ABQ Connect.
This is ABQ Connect.
Oh, we continue our conversation with Glenn Lutyens with Focus on the Family. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist. Glenn, thanks for sticking with us through the break.
You're very welcome.
All right. So we've touched a little bit already on the topic of finances in marriage and even before marriage, considering these things before we jump into a marital bliss and financial issues, sometimes trying to combat that marital bliss. So many people, when this subject comes up, I've heard them say, you know, well, you know, we just get separate accounts.
Right.
Can you speak to that, Glenn?
Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. There are times where a separate account is easier. I'm not saying that there are times where a separate account is more godly, but it can be easier sometimes. And actually, often it's not, because people are like, well, yeah, but I make this amount, and so you need to be paying a greater percentage. But there are times where, okay, I'll pay this, you pay that. But is that really the framework of marriage that God has created? And I would say it's not. I would say that really is more like a rooming arrangement of, okay, I've got some expenses that I can pay for, and you have some, and so we'll just kind of divvy that up. But it's not that sense of let's work together to really find that way in which our finances are first and foremost under God, but then we're also really coming together and making some of those challenging decisions. Because one of the things that I think it does leave aside when people just have, you know, his account or her account, it leaves aside the delight that people find when they're successful in having that spending plan, when they're able to do that, because people can accomplish some pretty great things through making some of those decisions together and coming up with that plan. So I think really having that. Now, having said that, I am not against the idea of, you know, each spouse maybe having a savings account. I would rather get, you know, let's say if part of the spending plan is that each spouse gets a certain amount of money. Obviously, it has to fit within the framework, but they get some discretional money. And if they want to put it in a savings account and get 3% interest as opposed to putting it under the mattress, fine. But that's different. That's built in, as each person is still a whole individual. So it acknowledges that. But it gives each person that freedom then to decide what they're going to do with it. Maybe they want to spend it towards a gift for their spouse, and so it'd be better that it's in a separate account in that regard. But that's different than each person putting their income into two separate accounts and viewing it as a his and her perspective.
Oh, well said. Taking notes, Glenn. I hope others are taking notes as well. And hey, I'd be remiss if I didn't let those who said, "Hey, that savings account," or if I didn't bring up education from one of our other regular guests, our certified Kingdom advisor, Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates, who comes on for our Friday financial update. Hey, if you're going to do the savings account, strongly consider you looking at non-brick and mortar banks online. That right. Some of those savings are up as high as 5%. And every bit matters when you're trying to save for fun. So, but at any rate, hey, I mentioned also before we went to the break that little ones are watching. And I'm going to throw out two things to make sure that we get to them, because I may forget to bring it back up. One, how can we, as we walk through this, teach our kids about finances, and how much should they know?
Yeah. Well, I think just to kind of piggyback between what we were just talking about, my son, it was probably about two nights ago, gave me a call. He's 25. And he's got some money that he wanted to put into a high yield savings account. So we talked about kind of the non-brick and mortar. Well, the non-brick and mortar that me and my wife have money in is a little different, has a little bit lower interest rate than the one that he found. So I'm kind of a little jealous of the
learn from the kids. One that
he can, you're right. Absolutely. But yeah, I think there are basically three ways that learning can happen, particularly with younger children. One is mom and dad who are setting aside maybe one time per month to really have their financial conversation. And so they're going maybe into another room. Maybe they're saying, "Hey, kids, mom and dad, we're going to be spending some time together. Unless the house is on fire, we're not to be disturbed." And if the kids know mom and dad are in the other room and they're not hearing raised voices, that's a wonderful, wonderful model for kids, knowing that mom and dad are talking about finances and they're doing it lovingly, they're doing it respectfully, they're hearing each other. That's, that's a wonderful thing. So that's one modeling component. A second would be, what are just some of the conversations that are taking place in the kitchen, that kids are hearing? I'm not saying that every discussion whatsoever about finances has to take place in that once a month meeting. That once a month meeting is really more going to be a time of, okay, that's the plan we have. What are maybe some of the challenges? Where do we maybe need to move some money? What are some expenses that are coming up, and where are we going to get the money for that? That type of thing is in that larger meeting. But just some of the everyday conversations about finances, if they can be done respectfully and caringly, that's going to be, that's going to be a helpful thing for children to realize. Mom and dad, they were able to talk about money, and they didn't do it in a harsh way. They did it in a caring way. That's going to be another modeling component. The third one is really, how do you help children develop that threefold plan? I'll keep them all in the S category. What usually is referred to as giving. I'll make it an S and say serving, because we serve through the use of our money. And so when a child maybe gets money, maybe they've done some extra chores that are going to bring in a little bit more income, because it's a little bit above and beyond. I like the concept. I think Dave Ramsey has this, where he talks about, there are some things that you're just part of a family community. So there's some things that you do. You don't get paid for them. Mom and dad don't get paid for, cooking dinner or cleaning the car or anything like that. It's just a part of, we're a family, we're a community, we do that. But there can be things above and beyond where you're able to gain some income from. And then dividing those between serving, again, kind of what people would typically say is giving, spending, and then also the third one would be savings. And so, you know, if kids can put it in three separate jars and they can think about what they're going to do with it. Now, you're probably going to find that some kids are going to kind of burn a hole through the jars, and especially the spending one, or maybe it's going to be tempting to steal something from the, you know, savings or serving and put it in the spending jar. But if they can develop that concept of discipline, that, you know, being able to do that, can really be helpful, even if, you know, there might be when I was growing up, kind of the average savings account, I think, was 5%. That was just pretty common at, you know, First National Bank of Westwood. But, you know, if they can get this idea, if they can see that money is growing when they put it in there, or if they get money for a birthday or graduation or something, they can see it taking place. I think that really is beneficial to really produce that weight and not have that immediate gratification tendency that I think we so often have in our day.
Yeah. Well, and again, I hope that our audience is taking good notes. If you just joined us, Glenn Lutyens is walking through with us, you know, some of those financial issues that come up, hopefully before marriage and during marriage, and how to deal with that. As we're just about to run out of time, Glenn, but I also want to throw out to you, I guess on the counseling side, you know, one spouse, and you said, you know, there's different types, right? A spender and a saver. But the varying views of credit.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that when people get into debt for things, I'm not saying there's never a reason to do it. I mean, I didn't buy a house with all the money down, that type of thing. But it becomes very tempting to just use credit for this or that. And really, the more that we can early on maybe go without, so that we're in a better place. You mentioned before kind of the, you know, staying by a river as opposed to the Viking river cruise, you know, early on. So later on, we have some money that is set aside. And I think even when people do put aside money and they know that it's kind of there, it's growing, there's a positive feeling that comes from that. Just, you know, physiologically, that takes place. And also knowing that we are setting aside money for the Lord's work. It's real tempting to just kind of look at it as, okay, well, we'll deal with our expenses, whatever they are, and kind of whatever our patterns and habits have been. And if we have any left over, yeah, we're not adverse to giving to God. That's kind of a, you know, God, thank you that you blessed me with this, but I'm going to really spend this, and then, you know, I'll give you the dregs after that. But if we look at it first and foremost, at everything we are, every breath we take, every ability to think, every delight, every even sorrow that we encounter that God can make for good, that it all comes from the hand of God, that God allows that to take place in our life, and we can experience joy and delight. I want my financial situation to reflect that. I want to be a person with a heart towards generosity. And I would say that's an area that I've grown in over the years. I would say probably early on in my life, you know, did I tithe? Yeah, I did. But, you know, it was probably begrudgingly and, you know, probably not any more than I needed to, you know, in that mindset. But really, if we have a heart of gratitude, I think that honors God, and I think God delights in that.
Amen. Well, as we typically do, I want to draw our listeners' attention to resources available to them. I actually, Glenn, already have clicked on focusonthefamily.com. Mm-hmm. I did a simple search for financial stewardship, and there's all kinds of articles available. Right near the top of the list, a post by Vance Fry that came out last year, Biblical Stewardship, God's Plan for Your Money. But there's also articles like Family Financial Fitness, And finding financial unity in marriage, the focus on the family crew, along with yourself, have provided a lot of great information, and focusonthefamily.com is a great place to go. If you're not finding what you're looking for, might they find it by calling 1-800, the letter A, family?
Yeah, they can do that. They can also, when they call 1-800-A-FAMILY, say, hey, I'd like to speak with a counselor. Could be a pastoral counselor, could be a professional counselor, but it's an initial consultation. We'd be more than happy to talk with them and maybe direct them toward some resources that might be beneficial. So 1-800, the letter A, and then family.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned Dave Ramsey in our conversation, which I know a lot of Christians have gone to for financial insight, and it's a good one to aim people at. Another one I would encourage our listeners to check out. Well, actually, you could tune in weekday mornings at 4:30 or 11:30 to hear from Rob West on faith and finance. And for those not familiar with Rob, maybe Ron Blue is a name you might remember, but he's part of that organization, and essentially we're the Kingdom Advisors. Find their direction, and you can find their website at faithfi.com on the web. But some great information, Glenn. I don't want to cut you off. Anything else you want to share before we finish it up?
Yeah, I just think having that heart together to say, you know, we've been given an opportunity to do this together. Sometimes men with the perspective that, okay, I'm the head of the home, so I need to make these decisions, we're really missing out on the fact that God created the relationship between husband and wife where we can learn from each other, we can grow together. Yes, I believe that there is a greater responsibility that a husband has, but not simply to dictate, okay, what are we going to spend the money on? What are we not going to spend it on? But really finding that plan together and really enjoying the delight of that.
All right. Well, thanks to Glenn Lutyens with Focus on the Family, and thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.